How's it going?
Super tired. I'm
sorry I woke you up at this ungodly hour of what, like 11 o'clock a.m. or something?
It's almost 11. I was up until like 5 a.m.
Oh no.
5:30 last night. No, it's okay. It was dumb. I was like reading Supernatural fan fiction.
I started. Like the moment I like got out of bed, I started reading that thing you sent me, and then I was like, no, I need to stop this. I have stuff to do this morning, so I haven't finished it, but it looks really good.
It was so good, and so I just immediately like slid down that rabbit hole of that author's picks, and they have like 77, which means I will be here for a while. And I was like trying to go to sleep at a somewhat reasonable hour, but you know that thing where you keep like your brain is fixating on a thing and you keep thinking about it anyway?
Yeah, it's like well clearly this must be more important.
Right. It's like, well, also if I'm going to just lie awake in bed thinking about this anyway, maybe I should go read more fic.
Was that one of the recs that Road Rhythm sent you?
It was. They sent me this like amazing like I don't even know. It must be well over 100 fic recs. Like, so
yeah.
I'm like, I have a lot of stuff to. And Fio's like, are you joining the Supernatural fandom? I was like, no, don't say that.
Luckily, there's like a significant barrier to entry to Supernatural fandom, which is that you have to watch 17 years worth of Supernatural.
That's the thing for some of these fics. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. Like, the context, I'm just like, who knows? They're brothers, and they're fucking. That's my, like...
I can just kind of accept that, like, they've all died a whole bunch of times. So, like, anything to do with, like, them dying, or them, like, having weird demon energy, or whatever, is like...
Right.
Yeah. They're just, like, in this nebulous stage of constant resurrection or something. I have no idea if that's actually true in the show, but that's my perception of it.
That sounds pretty much accurate as far as I know. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Why I'm tired at 11 a.m. Oh man, but I love this episode we saw last night or yesterday.
I mean, so I saw it this morning, but good for you. Will finally drags out Jack to go ice fishing, which just seems like a significant feat. Surprised he agreed to that. Should have bought a better hat.
Just Will's like whole monologue on bait and lures and fishing is so great.
Like, you have to make sure that your lure is the one thing he wants.
You have to create a world where the only things that exist are you and the fish.
Successfully did that.
It's true. It didn't work out the way he wanted, though.
Right. So they bring the fish back to Hannibal, who puts a truly obscene amount of oil on them.
Which, like, you have to throw that oil away now. Like, it was touching raw meat. Why did you waste a whole pan of oil?
Right, what are just, you like, doing? Put the fish in it. You could have, like, used a brush, right? That would be, like, a normal thing to do.
Or just pour some on the outside and rub it in with your hands. Like, what are you doing? I guess it wouldn't have been as cinematic.
And Jack looks so confused when he sets down this, like, fish with all the, like, octopus pieces coming out of it. And also, I think the fish are all eating their own tails, maybe?
Right.
I couldn't quite tell.
Fish or a verse. Like, why would you do that?
And Jack is just like, we brought you some perfectly normal fish. What's wrong with you?
I find the trout to be a very Nietzschean fish.
What a thing to say. What is a very Nietzschean fish? Please.
I don't...
Why is the trout more Nietzschean than other fish?
And Will is saying, it was my turn to provide the meat. And Hannibal says, I hope that doesn't mean you still have doubts about what I serve at my table. And it was just another, like, catapult him into the sun moment of, no, he knows what you serve at your table.
There were, like, so many catapults him into the sun moments. And now for some reason, I, like, kept thinking that phrase. And I'm like, did we make that phrase up? Or is that, like, a thing? Is catapult him into the sun, like, a thing?
I feel like that's something we might have picked up from Bees, who has really descriptive ways of, like... ways they would like to, I don't know, make Hannibal stop.
Because that's how you ended your masterpiece of a fic this week.
Which I'm thrilled, like, people actually found it funny. Because I was pretty convinced that people were just going to be like, what the fuck is wrong with it?
That they were going to be, like, angry at you?
Maybe not angry, but I definitely, like, was expecting just, like, straight up confusion. And, like, what?
Apparently the urge to catapult him into the sun is a universal one.
I mean, I feel like you can only write so many fics with a straight face. Like, there's a certain point where you're just like, you're all ridiculous. I hate you.
It's like, how many Richard Silker quotes can possibly apply to this situation?
Totally.
And Will asks, well, I tried to have Hannibal killed. Isn't that personal?
I love that. Like, in response to Jack being like, oh, well, none of our actions were personal. Will is like, no.
Jack is also kind of saying that to him, like, oh, I put you in jail, but it wasn't personal. And he's kind of like, yeah, that felt personal. It's still personal.
Right. It did seem like Jack was kind of trying to, like, excuse himself. And yeah. That was Will's way of also not letting him off the hook.
Yes. And then Will says, this fish is delicious, and makes a super gross face, which reminded me that I think I read something, I don't know if it was Janice Poon or someone else who was, like, writing about this, saying that, like, the first take, the director was like, can you say that again and look like the fish is delicious?
I saw that in an outtake, I think. It was really funny.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Okay, maybe that's in the, like, bloopers.
I don't think he ever quite manages it. He's definitely, like, very angry about this fish and or Hannibal.
He's like, I could have made this myself, but better.
And less weird. Less Nietzschean.
Yes.
So I feel like I remember seeing that they used, like, a real horse carcass in one of
the scenes. Oh my god! That's really horrible.
Because I feel like I remember reading something that was basically like, we had to, like, make sure we got take right because we only had, like, the one horse.
Right, you can't go and, like, get another horse carcass if you fuck it up.
Right, I assume that's very expensive. And I'm just like, I wonder, like, if that smelled bad in real life. Like,
I mean, it must have been, I don't, like, where would you get that from? Can you, like, where do you, like, special order a freshly dead horse from?
I don't know. I mean, I know they have, like, meat companies that specialize in weird meats. Like, I used to work for this chef who at one point was, like, I don't know if it was a brag, but, like, was definitely saying, like, oh, yeah, I have this supplier who can get, like, pretty much any kind of meat you want. Like, alligator, crocodile. So he's like, hey, so if you ever, like, want some meat to make at home, like a weird kind of meat, let me know and I can get it for you. Like, okay.
I'm curious about actually, like, whether they would do that, right? Because there's that article where the interviewer asked Brian, like, if making this show impacted his approach to food. And he said that, yes, he became, like, mostly vegetarian as, like, a direct result of, like, telling this story because he had this realization about, like, the similarity of, like, humans to animals, and that, like, he didn't, like, which, like, in context is kind of funny that he was saying, like, mostly vegetarian, I mostly don't eat land mammals, but, like, in that context, what would be, like, the philosophy of, like, choosing to kill a horse to have its carcass on the show?
I mean, I was kind of assuming it was already dead, because people kill horses all the time for, like, all manner of reasons. So I'm assuming they didn't kill it specifically for this, which is why I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah. That's what I would assume. It is kind of an, like, if it were, like, a specialty meat supplier who, that, like, then in that case, like, you ordering an entire carcass would probably directly result in the death of the animal.
Right. But, like, don't they kill, like, racehorses all the time? Like, just horses that can no longer do horsey things?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, probably, like, a vet for, like, those animals would, like, know of, like, an animal that was having to be put down around that time. So, yeah, maybe it did smell. Anyway.
Yeah. Now I, like, really want to look this up afterwards.
Right.
I'm looking it up right now, and I kind of can't find anything, so I gotta dig later.
Somewhere in the credits, there is probably the name of the person whose job is, or whose, like, department is prop procurement, and I'm sure they would be happy to tell you all about where they got the dead horse from.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. Try to see if I can find that.
Fun. So for some reason, Hannibal is still consulting with the FBI.
Which is weird.
And his take is, I agree with the pagans. The horse is divine. Just definitely the kind of information the FBI wants when they open an investigation into a murder.
Of course. Right. Which, like, I mean, I guess that must be what you want if you, like, pull Hannibal Lecter in on the case.
Right, like, what else do you think you're gonna get?
Doesn't do this for a living. And then he's very, like, transparently pushing for Will to get in on the case.
Yeah.
He's like, Jack, this killer doesn't think like anyone else. You need to find someone else who doesn't think like anyone else.
Well, everyone here is fucking nuts, so I guess that would be anyone. And then Zeller uses the word enwombed.
Oh, God. And what was it? Was it, I forget who cuts who off, but one of them definitely, like, cuts the other off. It was like, that was a little wordy.
Yeah, I think Price just stops him. And then we meet Margot.
And I hate Mason, and I can't wait until he dies.
Yeah, he's the worst.
Fuck this guy.
It's funny that we were talking about using tears in cooking without the other night, without remembering for a while that that is what he does.
I think this scene has, like, ruined that entire idea for me.
Yeah.
But I kind of forgot that we don't meet Margot until, like, this is, what, episode 8 of season 2?
Yeah. I love all these scenes with Margot because they feel kind of pure. Like, it feels like he has less ulterior motive than with, like, the other murder interns, because he's totally right. She should kill her brother, and it would be psychologically helpful to her. Like, that's a genuinely good idea. He should die. And it's not even, like, encouraging her to follow her nature or whatever. It's like, that's not her nature. It's just, like, this one person specifically that she should definitely kill.
Right. Yeah, It definitely, like, I think he, like, genuinely likes her, and it just seems really, like, wholesome and straightforward. Like, clearly I was very tired last night because I was watching that sex scene between Hannibal and Alana, and the first thought that came to mind was, how do I write sex scenes that feel this silky?
I feel like I've read stuff that, like, attempts to imitate that kind of atmosphere, and my general impression is, like, it doesn't work great when it's words, at least for me. I don't know. Some people maybe like that kind of stuff, but the equivalent of, like, disjointed words and impressions is just kind of like, okay, I'll skip all this.
Totally. But yeah, I noticed the thing that you noted, that Hannibal is, like, weirdly tilting his head all the way up, like, the entire time they're talking in bed.
Right. She's, like, talking to his face, and he's, like... gradually just looking more and more up to, like, not, like, I don't know what's going on.
Right. Like, what was he, like, so she's basically talking to, like, the very bottom of his chin because his head is just, like, all the way up.
It's really weird.
And just, I don't know, I love that they're just, like, still here talking about Will.
And he also tells her for the first time that the reason that Will tried to kill him was to protect her. Which, like, if I were her, I'd be like, wait, how do you know that? Did he tell you that? What's going, like, this is a new piece of information.
Right.
That he only knows because he was the one who threatened her in the first place. But, like, right. She just doesn't question that at all.
And he's basically, like, telling her that he would probably kill her.
I mean, he doesn't say, like, because I threatened your life. Like, I guess the, like, area of doubt is, like, maybe Will could have told him that, like, he believes in the, you know, crazy mind that Alana thinks is his problem, that someone wants to kill Alana, you know?
I mean, even, like, Will has been saying that Hannibal is the Chesapeake Ripper for a while now. Like, he totally could mean, like, Will thinks I was gonna kill you, but I wouldn't, because
But, like, why would he think that?
Because it's been established at this point that Will isn't crazy, and isn't a murderer.
Yeah.
Okay, but, like, so does Jack just not really give a shit about the fact that Will tried to kill Hannibal? Because that's always something that kind of weirded me out. That's, like, you're telling the head of, like, the behavioral analysis unit at the FBI that you tried to kill somebody.
I think Will never does actually admit it in that in so many words. And he now Jack, did he?
At the beginning of this episode,
oh, right.
He was like, I tried to have
you. He literally says it.
Okay, no, right. Like at dinner with the both of them. I think that's why I was always like, that's weird that he never gets arrested. I think Jack doesn't care.
Yeah, I think it's that, like, now at this point, like, before when he wasn't admitting it, there was still, like, doubt in, like, I think now the whole point of that, like, ice fishing expedition was that, like, Jack believes him, and now they're both planning together on, like, kind of going rogue and, like, getting this done on their own. So at that point, it's, I guess, kind of safe for Will to admit that he's tried this before and it didn't work.
Right. Also, just, like, a last note on that, like, sex scene where Hannibal and Alana are, like, chilling, talking in bed, where Hannibal says, it's healthy he's back in therapy with a good psychiatrist. And then just that self-satisfied smile. And then he immediately, like, rolls over and starts making out with Alana again. And I just couldn't help thinking about that Berlin Wall fic.
Yeah,
he like masturbates in front of a mirror, and I don't know. I love that he's just like canonically such a narcissist.
Yeah, it's like thank God like, I'm so brilliant.
Right, like I'm such a good psychiatrist. Let's have sex now.
So then we learn from Zeller or Price, I don't remember which, that shark fetuses cannibalize each other in utero. Thank you for that information. And then the live bird bursts out of the lady's chest.
Which was really funny for some reason.
It's it
was
definitely a super hilarious scene.
But there's no way that bird would be alive. Like, no.
No. I think it actually makes more sense when I read that Brian originally intended it to, like, happen on screen such that when Peter put the bird in her, the bird was dead. And the bird came back to life inside her. Which obviously doesn't actually make more sense than what happens. But because that brings it into, like, a fully, like, we've just abandoned logic completely space, it's like, yes, that makes a kind of metaphorical sense. Whereas because the bird was supposedly alive when he put it inside of her, you're in this brain space of, like, clearly the bird would be dead.
Yeah, I actually do wish they had done that because that would have made more sense.
I do also, like, I sympathize with, like, the reason they didn't, which supposedly is just that, like, it would kind of upset the balance of, like, this constant question of, like, is this happening in a supernatural space or is this happening in the real world? And, like, that question is never really answered and really have an answer. But, like, something that definite would be, like, too far, I think.
Right. That kind of, like, ruins the ambiguity and, like, definitely comes down on one side of that question.
Yeah. But also, okay, so they bring this body back to the FBI. The body is dead. They put their hands on the chest and feel that something is moving in it. If you work for the FBI and there is something moving inside of a physical object that is very clearly dead, I feel like my first instinct would be to assume that the thing moving is electronic and call a bomb squad.
Right. I wouldn't assume that the person's heart was beating. No. Like, that's not the first thing I would think.
I guess that would be, like, the first like, obvious thought of, like, she has a heartbeat, but she's clearly dead. Okay, we're discarding that theory and calling a bomb squad. So, Will gets in on this.
Yep.
And he meets Peter and brings Hannibal along with him.
I think it was just Will and Jack this time.
Oh, Jack, like, sorry,
They interviewed Peter first. I felt really bad for Peter this time around. He was very worried about that bird.
And the way that Will even, like, starts out by framing it as, like, a head injury aggravated by stress. It's, like, even before all the social worker stuff starts, it's, like, a very clear setup.
Yeah, I didn't notice that, actually.
Parallels between Will and Peter. And then we get a therapy session.
This, all the therapy sessions and, like, this half of the second season are so good.
And finally Will asks, I prefer sins of omissions to outright lies. Don't lie to me. Which is interesting because he usually doesn't anyway, but it's still a really like, awesome moment of, like, okay.
I guess he kind of has been lying to him this whole season, right? Like, kind of, I mean, for the sake of plausible deniability, like, yeah. Laying on to, like, oh, you still think I did it, you know?
Yeah.
But I never noticed before that after Will says, don't lie to me, Hannibal asks, will you return the favor? And Will just kind of smiles and doesn't say anything.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Which is actually, you know, not lying to him in its own way.
Yeah.
He's not promising this because he's working with Jack.
But he does also stick, mostly stick to his own criteria of sins of omission.
Yeah, that's true.
And this phrase, doing bad things to bad people feels good, comes up like a ton of times in this episode. And I think it's come back before and I don't remember who says it first. But I feel like this time around, like, thinking about the general, like, post-fall kind of space that people often write, I think I'm often, yeah. like, maybe just, like, cynically not 100% convinced by the, like, vigilante angle that, like, comes up a lot in fic. But actually, like, the more they discuss this idea, the more I actually am convinced by that. Because the idea that, like, that is what Will is supposed to, like, accept about himself or whatever is that, like, not just that he wants to, like, indiscriminately kill people, but specifically that, like, doing bad things to bad people feels good, and that, in fact, that has been the driving force behind his entire career this entire time, like, both makes sense and is like, okay, well, then why not? Like, that does actually pretty much lead in the vigilante direction, you know?
Right. And I think Bonarina of My Skull wrote, like, a really great post about this that was, like, drawing parallels between, like, you know, just, like, a metaphor of this whole situation. It was basically saying, like, you know, Will is, like, the sheepdog that wants to, you know, kill wolves that are coming near the sheep. And, like, in a sense, Hannibal kind of, like, doesn't necessarily understand that drive and, like, wants to see Will kill a bunch of sheep and, like, keeps putting sheep in danger. I'm, like, butchering this really badly, but it's basically, I think it was basically saying that Hannibal getting Will to, like, murder people would have been a lot easier if he had taken a different angle and, like, realize, like, the type of people Will wants to kill is, like, less indiscriminate than his own criteria. Although,
I feel like most of the people he, like, wants Will to kill pretty much, like, fulfill Will's criteria? Or his eventual criteria?
Thinking that, actually, because he does send, was it Randall Tier after him, right?
Yeah, like, Randall, Tobias, Dollarhide, obviously, who else?
Garrett Jacob Hobbs in the beginning.
Yeah.
All murderers. Bedelia, who Will really doesn't like and kind of sees as, like, willingly being part of this thing.
Yeah. I guess it does kind of get blurred, like, maybe not necessarily the, like, bad things to bad people angle, but just that, like, his definition of a bad person shifts a little bit. Because, like, Chilton, I don't know, he's a bad person. He's a bad person to Will.
I do think that Will's definition of, like, bad in this situation, like, extends pretty far. And, like, isn't really, like, serial killers is also just, like, people who make decisions that I think are bad.
Yeah.
Like Chilton and Bedelia.
And then Zeller comes up to Will to apologize, and there's this sound effect, which is, like, a doorbell when, like, Zeller is behind him. It's like he's, like, knocking for admittance into, like, Will's forgiveness, which I really like.
I like that. I didn't notice that.
And it's a really nice apology, like, even though, like, it's clear that, like, even though Will doesn't quite, like, Zeller says it knowing that Will, like, not accepting is a possibility and that that would be okay, which seems like a significant difference from, like, how Jack has approached it, where, like, an apology is a means to an end.
And Will really tries hard not to accept the apology. And, like, not in a, like, it's not enough kind of way, but in a, like, well, the evidence was compelling, and I understand why you did that kind of way.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that Zeller keeps pushing the point.
You know? Yeah.
Okay, wait. So I'm just thinking about, like, the whole thing with, like, post-fall, like, Will and vigilante justice and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of fix, which isn't really, like, a favorite direction for me, but there's a lot of fix where Will, like, tells Hannibal he has to stop killing people in yeah. order for them to, like, be a thing. But I don't know that I buy that necessarily. Like, I don't know that Will has that much of a problem with, like, Hannibal being the way he is. Because, like, thinking about it, there are, like, two different points in the show where he just tells Hannibal to leave, basically. Where he, you know, in the first time is at the end of season two, where he, like, warns Hannibal and wants him to leave, to, like, escape.
Yeah.
And then after Muskrat Farm, where he does the same thing and, like, tells Hannibal, like, I don't want to know where you are, just, like, leave.
Clearly it's not the fact that people are going to die that's an issue for him.
Right. Like, in both cases, like, people are going to obviously die if you let, like, a serial killer go. So I actually wonder if it's all that realistic that he would have, like, that big of a problem with it.
Yeah, I think it's, like, not a favorite trope of mine in terms of, like, what I, you know, think would happen, quote-unquote, based on the information we have. But I also really like it when it's, like, well done and, like, justified and kind of, like, explores all of the fractal, like, effects of that on both of them.
I think my issue with it is that it, like, to me, it flattens Will's character down into something that I think it isn't. Like, I mm-hmm. think it's, I don't know, like, weirdly, alternately, like, overlooked or, like, played up too much that Will actually really does want to kill people. Like, that's been, like, a driving force in his life, that he has these, like, fantasies and desires that he can't get rid of.
And even, like, his entire, like, previous career as, like, a regular officer, like, I guess in the context of, like, doing bad things to bad people, like, if that was your drive in life, then, like, yeah, going into law enforcement theoretically doesn't allow you to kill bad people. I mean, I guess, well, in an indirect way if you live in the States, but, like, on a personal level, but, like,
right,
like, taking away someone's freedom is, like, the next worst thing you could do to them. Mm-hmm. That's still a bad thing. And then back to some therapy for some murder tips.
So, did we find out in the show what Mason did to Margot exactly?
Okay, I don't think we do. And I was reading about it, and so it's, like, one of these things that, like, kind of like the thing with Dollarhide in season 3, it seems to be, like, one of those things where they removed content and then did not replace it with anything in particular. So I haven't actually read this part of the book, and I don't plan to, because I think it's in one of the ones that people generally think is terrible. But in the book canon, Mason sexually abused Margot as a child and broke her arm. And so I think for, like, in the show, like, Brian didn't want, like, didn't want them to be children, like, you wanted them to be adults, but also that they wanted to remove, like, explicit reference to the sexual abuse angle, because he didn't want to, like, fall into the trope of, like, did this sexual abuse make this person gay kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So he, like, I don't think that is ever, like, stated in the show, but it does yeah. this weird thing where it's, like, they don't provide any other explanation. And then they show her with a cast on her arm, so it's just, like, this weird Easter egg okay. for anyone who happens to know what it's referring to, that, like, yeah, the only thing that makes sense is that that's the case, but we're not actually going to say so for people who don't already know that.
Right. That makes sense. And I think I'm, like, remembering that later, like, Margot has a bunch of knife wounds on her back, and I think they refer to, like, Mason, like, sticking her with a knife, like you do with pigs, to, like, test how fatty they are.
Gross.
Right. So, I mean, at least yeah. there's, like, some context.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense.
Well, I don't love that, and I don't love it when it happens again with Dollarhide, where there's, like, information removed that you'll only know if you read the books, but it doesn't replace yeah. it with anything, because then it's just, like, well, I don't understand what's happening, but it's clearly something unpleasant.
Right. Like, appreciate knowing that now, because I feel like it makes everything make a lot more sense. I feel like the irony is that I would trust, like, Brian Fuller and this show in particular to, like, actually do those story arcs without making them cheap in a way that I don't like.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, I'm as irritated as the next person when it's like, oh, look, rape as, like, a character catalyst for revenge again.
Right.
Because I feel like that's, like, often used as motivation for, like, female characters in, like, a really cheap, shitty way.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would feel like that here, just because the storytelling is, you know, so much more layered.
But I can see just, like, not wanting to spend the time on it, too.
Yeah. And I totally do, like, respect not wanting to, like, give people the opportunity to be like, oh, look, she's a lesbian because she was abused.
Yeah. And Hannibal tells her, I'm much weirder than you will ever be, Margot. It's fine to be weird.
Yeah.
Just so cute.
He is much weirder than she'll ever be. He is much weirder than most people.
And also, if you really want to kill your brother, wait until you can get away with it, or find someone to do it for you. Which she kind of does both of those. Alana helps her, and they do wait. And it almost, like, I don't think he actually is, but it almost feels like he's offering. Like, if I were her, I'd be like, what is this?
Yeah. Oh, man. And then Will, I think Will and Hannibal are talking to Peter now. Is Hannibal there now? Is that, like, this conversation?
I don't think so. Doesn't Will bring him the bird by himself?
Oh, right.
Yeah, Will just brings, like, Peter this bird from evidence and says, I used to be FBI, now I'm really not.
I feel so bad for him.
Super duper not in the FBI. Although, wait, I guess that implies that he's not teaching anymore? Has he been, like, fired?
I don't know, actually, because we never see him in a classroom again.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that is what it would mean.
I mean, maybe not fired. Maybe he's just not doing that at the moment because he's got more important things going on.
Maybe. I mean, he did just get out of jail.
Maybe they, like, hired a temp for the rest of the semester and he doesn't want to kick that person off the payroll.
Oh, and then Peter's social worker is the fucking worst.
He's, like, he's so creepy. And this, like, persistent smile that he has is probably the creepiest thing about him. And so I just wonder if, like, the reason that Hannibal doesn't smile in, like, normal person smiling situations is because he tried it and he ended up looking like that. And it was like, nope, this is a terrible idea.
Which, if that was the reason, well done, Hannibal, because that is good a choice. Creepy smile.
That, like, was definitely, like, his facial expression that, like, incriminated this guy.
But I love Alana in this interview scene, like, just pushing all this dude's buttons. Which, okay, why are these people always working for the FBI? They don't work here. Doesn't the FBI have its own psychiatrists and interviewers and agents who are supposed to do this? Is this just a TV thing?
I think Alana does work for the FBI, because that's what Will said in, like, the very first episode. It's like, you don't need me, you have, like, these other people, and she was one of them.
Okay. Fair.
Like, he does say she also teaches at Georgetown, but I feel like he's implying that, like, that is one of her regular gigs.
Like, she has, like, a consulting position for the FBI.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a real thing, but she seems to have a relationship with them.
Right. I mean, that would make sense because she's the one who recommends Hannibal to Jack. And that would only make sense if, just, like, he was in a position to take that into consideration.
Yeah.
And then we get to the horse scene.
So this guy killed a fucking horse. I wonder which one was the real dead horse. Or maybe they were the same horse. Who knows?
Yeah. I hate this guy. Peter puts him in a horse. I'm assuming he hit him with the hammer, too, because I don't know that you could put a conscious person who's struggling into a horse.
Also, there weren't, like, I didn't see, you know, like, a huge pile of horse guts on the floor or anything. So, like, how did this entire adult man's body fit inside this horse?
Right, because I definitely remember, like, when he's climbing out, guts spill out with him.
Right. I just, like, is there enough room in there? I don't want to experimentally verify this. I just have doubts.
I feel like horses, because, I mean, you know, I've ridden horses a couple times. I think I could probably fit in a horse if I curled up real small, but I don't know that a grown adult man could fit in a horse.
Right. I mean, I guess, like, foals are pretty large when they're born. Okay. So I guess you put the guts back in after. That's fine.
That's, like, another one of those things where it's like, a human would definitely suffocate.
Yes. So Peter puts a social worker in the horse. Will and Hannibal drive to wherever the stable is. And it's, like, really sweet. I don't know. It's, like, this weird moment of, like, hating each other, but also, like, yep, we're still gonna go investigate this crime scene together. Two people right, like, who don't work for the FBI going to a crime scene in the middle of the night.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, yeah, the conversation is kind of sweet in its own way. Like, Will is talking about, you know, being in the dark alone. And Hannibal's like, you're not alone, I'm here with you.
It's important to tell other people how they make you feel. But I feel like Will hasn't quite filled him in on, like, all, like, I don't know, it seems like he knows less than the full situation here. Yeah. Because in his face when Will says, is your social worker in that horse, is like all of us.
His face definitely does, like, a thing there.
Oh, and I feel so, like, weirdly proud of Peter when he says, I used to have a horrible fear of hurting anything, but he helped me get over that. It's like, yes.
I felt so bad for him there. It's like, oh, you poor thing.
Like, I feel so bad for him, but it's also, like, this seems, like, somehow a good moment for him. And it's like, having a horrible fear of hurting anything while being, like, someone who is constantly, like, rescuing and rehabilitating wildlife would be really scary. And now he's gotten over that fear by putting the person who's hurting him in a horse.
Yeah, I could see that. And then, I don't know, it was so sweet. Like, Will just kind of pulls Peter off to the side to a different room to presumably console him about murdering somebody. And Hannibal just sticks around, pats some sheep.
Okay, the patting of the sheep. I can't tell, like, what... Like, does he think that the social worker is dead? Because we see him patting the sheep, and then he, like, moves to the side and, like, calmly watches this guy struggle out of the horse, and then moves aside to reveal Will behind him. So it, like, almost reads like, at that point, they know that the social worker is in the horse, and they're not gonna help him out. They're just gonna wait. And Hannibal's just patting the sheep to pass the time.
I guess I read it as, like, Hannibal assumed that he was dead until he started crawling his way out. I figured Will was coming back to let him out, because it seems like he's pretty invested in Peter not being a murderer, or, like, you know, not going to jail for doing this. I love that, though. I love Hannibal just stepping aside so Will can hold a gun on this guy.
Yeah, and all of the, like... Who actually wants Will to shoot this guy at what point and why is, like, so fascinating. Like, when, like, Will pulls Peter aside saying, you don't deserve to kill him. Which is, like, a really nice thing to say. Kind of like, he deserves to die, but, you know, this is about you now. You're more important.
Right.
Which I guess is basically the same thing that Hannibal's saying to him.
Yeah, that's true. Also, just that guy... Like, putting down the hammer, going, I'm the victim here, officer. Like, fuck you.
You have severely misjudged this situation if you're calling anyone here, officer.
Hannibal's just like, I'm not a cop.
And then Hannibal puts his hand over the gun. Presumably being totally okay with the idea that he might get his hand shot off. And, like, that would be 100% worth it.
So the first time I watched it, I thought he just, like, put his hand over the front of it. I didn't realize that he actually stopped the hammer with his thumb.
Oh, okay.
So, which is kind of a... I don't know, I like the implications, because then you can see, like, Will actually does pull the trigger. He just took too long, and Hannibal got his, thumb
okay,
in
okay, I didn't see that.
But I love the implications, because, yeah, that definitely is a moment where it's like, wow, Hannibal could have gotten his hand blown up. Like, or at least gotten a whole shot in it. But someone, I was talking to someone about this on Twitter who, like, knows more about guns than I do. And they were like, oh, yeah, that, like, if you actually did that, the hammer, like, comes down with enough force that would have, like, punched a hole in his hand, like, where he stopped it. So he would have been, like, bleeding.
Now I kind of want to, like, just continue that scene where, like, he is bleeding and we just didn't see it. And then as soon as this episode ends, it's like, oh, okay, well, now we need to go to the hospital.
Yeah. And then Hannibal is just so enamored by Will in this moment.
Yeah.
We get the chrysalis speech and that very fond, like, neck grasp.
The neck grasp. The neck grasp that I assumed was Photoshop, and it is not.
It's funny because, like, that still, like, the screenshot of that frame looks so romantic, but in context, I feel like Will is just having a real shitty time.
Yeah, I had that thought too of, like, it doesn't quite look like what it is in context.
Right.
Oh, that's that. Yeah. What have you been getting up to lately?
Oh, I actually did read a bunch of Hannibal fic.
Hooray.
I guess it was partially rereading and partially reading for the first time because I realized I kind of skipped around the series a bunch, but I've been reading the series The Incredul... Oh, God, why can't I talk? The Incredul... Ugh. I can't say this. Okay. It's by Moore Knight. I can't pronounce this. Incredulity of St. Thomas. There we
Incredulity.
Go.
Incredulity. Okay.
There we go.
There we go. It's like, I can't guess what that word is from this context.
So it's really good, but also I've been like texting you and Bees being like, I don't understand what's happening. Because there are certain bits where it's like very clearly like referencing something that happened, except it didn't. So you're kind of left with the feeling that like someone yanked a chapter of the book out and you're just kind of left with like the pieces. But I found out that the very last fic, the one that I'm reading now, which is like 120,000 words, is like, I think, supposed to fill in some of those gaps.
Okay. Cool.
So I'm excited.
Like a kind of backwards.
Yeah.
Thing, yeah.
Which actually, this has made me reconsider doing, like, I don't know. It's made me reconsider fucking with timelines because
yeah,
it is truly, truly frustrating as a reader. As much as I enjoy this story, it's actually very frustrating.
But I love that you were like, I feel like this is my fault. I must be missing something. And I'm just like, wouldn't it be awesome to be such a good writer that you can make your readers gaslight themselves into, like, believing they must have missed something? That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
And it very much is that kind of thing where I'm, like, constantly, like, I must be stupid somehow. This is clearly me and not the story, which is brilliant. But no, it really is the story.
I feel like the only time I've read something like that I, like, really got, I guess I wasn't even really like fucking with timeline, but have you read the Sherlock Amnesia story?
I probably avoided it because that's a trope I really don't like.
That's fair. It's just like really ingeniously constructed to like unfold what happens.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I feel like I wouldn't have like sought out that trope on its own either, but it was like just one of those stories that it was like, you have to read this.
Yeah.
And it was really good and, like, very clever in the way that it gave you more and more information in a way that was interesting but not redundant.
But, yeah, I don't know. Like, the characterization in Moore Knight's fics are so good. Like, I don't know. I think it might be the best characterization I've read in this fandom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so dense and interesting. Also, their tags are, like, obscenely beautiful in a way that kind of upsets me. Like, how they just drip poetry all over everything like it's nothing. Like, this series of tags for the last fic just says, heart of hearts of all, basically. Bleeding hearts. Your heart bleeds all the time. It only does so inside of you until someone opens you up.
Whoa. Okay.
So that's the tags. The fic is pretty much that. Expanded into several, like 100,000 words.
Wow.
What are you reading?
Let's see. I did just read last night that story that someone wrote this for Nafila's wink bank illustration, drawing of, like, Will playing the guitar.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, like, kind of about that, but also Joni L. Speak wrote A Case of You, which is, like, inspired by this drawing, but also, like, what I like about it is that it kind of takes place in this, like, far into the future space where, like, they can travel and are not being hunted and, like, that general, like, everything is okay place, except it also has, like, this really strong undercurrent of, like, they still kind of hate each other and resent each other, like, more so than most things that are, like, set that far into, like, everything being fundamentally okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really lovely. I also just found today this collection called the Fic Journal of the Plague Year collection.
Yeah.
Which is such a cool idea, and I love it. And basically, I'll just read the, like, description, which is, as people all over the world deal with the coronavirus and its fallout, fic writing can be a place to process our feelings and provide a document of how fic and fic communities are helping us through this very weird time. All fics in this open collection should be, one, written during the period of the coronavirus situation, and two, include commentary in the endnote explaining how the fic and or writing process were affected by the global crisis. The fics don't necessarily have to be about illness, isolation, or the effects of the pandemic. Instead, the feelings, thoughts, and experience of the writer that the writer is going through during the situation should have influenced the fics in some way. So, yeah, I just thought that was a really cool idea, both as, like, a way to collect that stuff, but also that it's, like, part of the requirement, I guess, is just that there'd be, like, a small meta element in the endnote, kind of, like, explaining what's happening here in, like, an emotional way. And I like that the implication is just kind of, like, you know, that, like, hopefully one day people will be reading these things and the situation under which they were written will be, like, a distant memory. And so this information about the context will be important and, like, useful, like, almost historical document of, like, this genre of writing.
Yeah, I like that. I was kind of glancing at it for a second before we did this, and I went back and I read the endnotes you added to your fics, and I love them. It's, like, such an eloquent Thanks. Way to describe this, like, weird situation. I think I'm gonna go back. I've written, I think, one coronavirus fic, and I'm working on another one, so I think I'm gonna add endnotes to that so I can, like, put my stuff in this collection, because I think it's a super cool idea.
Yeah, and I don't know a lot of the fandoms that people are, like, including here, but I have, like, gone through some of them and, like, just read the endnotes to see, like, what people are saying, and that's really cool.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing that because I am kind of, like, more interested in just, you know, like, what, I don't know, what people's writing process looks like. I guess that's why I've been closely following Dean Wesley Smith's, like, chronicles of his daily life and writing, because I'm just like, okay, how is anyone doing this?
Yeah, which seems to be, like, a question a lot of people are asking, like, how do you do normal stuff?
Mm-hmm. We just finished up that fest we were doing.
Oh, yeah, that kind of happened.
Yeah, sort of. Thanks to everyone who participated.
Yeah.
So the Discord is closed now, but you can archive the prompts, right?
Yeah, they're on Dreamwidth and Pillowfort. And those should be linked from a tweet.
So if anyone still wants to fill prompts, you can, like, take a look and add them to the collection late or whatever.
Yeah. What's happening next week? I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either. Something good, I'm sure.
I want to see more. When does Bedelia come back? We haven't seen her in a million years.
Not until the last episode.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, wait, maybe second to the last episode, because Jack, like, catches her or whatever. Remember, she kind of goes on the run.
Oh, right. She's on the run. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Well, no wonder her one client is going so fucking crazy.
Yeah. That's true.
All right, if you want to come say hi to us, we are at CuriousCat@ConjoinedPod and the same name on Twitter.
Yep.
Or you could not know who we are on Twitter because we didn't say our names again at the beginning of this episode.
Okay.
See you next week.